Remaker's Mark, Episode 59, The Book of Eli. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in our 59th episode where we are discussing the post-apocalyptic faith-based journey? I don't know what to call this one. It's an interesting movie, post-apocalyptic for sure. The Book of Eli. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing tonight, most importantly? And then, slightly less importantly, you have an iPod in the apocalypse. What song absolutely needs to be on it?
First of all, Kyle, I am really well. I'm happy to be here tonight. I wasn't sure I was going to make it, so thank you for having me. Second of all, your description of the movie makes me think that Kirk Cameron should be in this film. And
ew.
He's probably in there somewhere.
Finally, my song that is the one song that's on my iPod in the apocalypse, no real reason other than it just popped in my head and seemed right, is The City by The Dismemberment Plan.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah.
Seemed right.
I dig it. Good choice.
Thank you.
Jeremy Nielsen, how are you tonight? And what would be your iPod song in the apocalypse?
I am alive, and sometimes that's the best you got.
Yep.
And my song for the apocalypse on my iPod is, without question, Adagio for Strings by Samuel Barber.
Ooh.
I don't know that one. Do I?
He's a modern composer, modern in that he was, I think, born in the 30s. And it was featured in Platoon and several other soundtracks. You would probably recognize it. It is haunting and beautiful, and I can fall asleep to it in a heartbeat. And so in post-apocalyptic times when everything is askew and nothing makes sense, it would calm me.
I like it. Good choice. Now we'll have to check that out. We'll see if we can link all this fun stuff in the show notes later. Maybe a little
Spotify
little embed.
Playlist.
Yeah, a little Spotify, a little Apple Music embed like our cover song. So, yeah, so everybody can check it out. Lee, where's the book? How are you tonight? And what would be your iPod song?
I'm well, and I think I would pick a recording of a medley of Queen songs performed by Extreme back in 1992. During the Freddie Mercury tribute concert.
Wow.
Dang.
Because it's like 15 minutes long.
I mean, good.
Nice.
Oh, I'm all about that.
That's a very unique and specific measure, and you get two bands worth of influence in one song.
Yes.
I like that.
Exactly. That is an efficient choice, Lee.
Plus yeah, seriously. 15 minutes of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Nice. Mark Josting, how are you tonight, and what would be your iPod apocalypse song?
I am very well, thank you. And for my song, I'm going to go to the Twin Cities band called Love Cars. The closer on their first album is called Broken Toes, and for the last 20-ish years, every time I have heard that song, it has just killed me. So that's my song, Broken Toes.
Can't wait to listen to all of these.
I love that song.
Yeah.
Love that whole album, in fact. So good.
Mm-hmm. Nearly perfect.
My name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host once again this fine evening. I am doing as well as can be expected, given the wackiness of everything going on. And I'm gonna go with the Lee school of things, but I'm going to about three up him in that I would choose LCD Sound System's song 4533. Which is 45 minutes and 33 seconds long. It was commissioned by Nike to be the playlist for a whole workout. So it starts up with like kind of stretching music, right? Music to that's kind of chill, and then it picks up, and then there's a few different, like, you know, a little bit more high BPM, a little bit more high energy, and then the last 10 minutes is like cool down music. So I don't anticipate that I'm going to be working out a lot in the apocalypse. However, I feel like if I need a specific energy, I feel like that's kind of got everything that I need. If I need to chill, it's the last 7 minutes. If I need to kind of like wake up to the day, it's the first few minutes. So that was my my strategy for that.
Interesting. I like it.
Plus, you know, 45 minutes of content.
Yes.
It's a great song, actually. I highly recommend it. I mean, it's weird calling it a song. It's an album. But yeah, it is literally one song. I just like the story behind it. I also like that Nike commissioned him to do that. Like, hey, guy, indie guy, make us a song. All right. I can see James Murphy now.
You'll regret
looking
this.
His chops. Yeah.
Is that the exactly. same band that did Dance Yourself Clean?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
When I was a wedding DJ, still am sometimes, and a bride and groom asked for that song towards the end of the night. I'd never heard of it. And I found it. And I'm like, all right, here we go. And I started playing it. I'm like, oh no, the dance is ruined. Like this is going to go, like this is going to go terribly. And everybody just sort of creeped onto the dance floor and they all just kind of got in, like everything's very quiet and very slow and everything.
Yeah.
But then it just breaks down and the place went ballistic. And yep. It was one of the best moments I have ever seen at a wedding.
Yeah, that song is unreal. I went to Clockwork Active Media used to have yearly parties, and there was one at the Varsity, and I went to one with Kate, and they did, whoever DJ'd it played Dance Yourself Clean and I Think You Freaky by D'Antwoord right after the other, and like I don't know if I've danced so hard in a 12-minute time frame than I have then. It was amazing. It was like a 2-hour wedding condensed into 12 minutes of Kyle getting funky.
I believe it.
It was something else. It was real good. Yeah. All right, Jer, this was your pick. So that means that you get to be our Remakers Mark recommender. So what do you recommend for us tonight?
Yes. So I have a podcast to recommend, as is often the case with us. It is a podcast that came out in 2009. It is, I believe, 7 or 8 episodes long. And it is called It Could Happen Here. I don't know if anybody is familiar with it.
No.
I'm assuming no. It is essentially a sociologist and a political scientist answering the question of what a civil war in the United States would look like. And it was recorded and published back about 1.5 years ago, so May of 2019. So before George Floyd, before COVID, Before a lot of these landmark things that have happened in 2020, which, remember when 2020 started 8 years ago? He breaks down what would cause a civil war to happen here in the United States and what it would look like at ground zero. What would people be doing and dealing with it, and how it would start, where it would come from. And the creepiest, not creepy, the eerie part about it is that he essentially predicts a lot of the things that have happened in 2020. Not necessarily in the way that they happened, but that Portland would be one of the main spots of it, and things like that. It's really fascinating. It is, I think, important where we are right now in the world geopolitically, and it's just a really fascinating and quick, like I said, 7 or 8 episodes, all about 30 to 45 minutes long. There's the opening episode's longer and the final episode's longer, but the rest of them are between 30 and 45 minutes. It is it's a fascinating little listen, and I would recommend it for everyone.
Say the name one more time.
It Could Happen Here.
Awesome. Cool. No, I hadn't heard of that, which surprises me. I'm really excited to check that out. That's great.
Yeah, I would really love to hear your feedback afterwards.
Cool. Now we move on to the summary of the film and our history with it. Andy, with an exclamation point, take it away.
The Book of Eli is a 2010 post-apocalyptic neo-western directed by the Hughes brothers of Albert and Alan, starring Denzel Washington as Eli, a former Kmart cart pusher who hears a divine message to take a copy of the King James Bible west. He has been lugging and reading the book for years, searching for the place where the book belongs. In a lovely nod to the industrial robber barons of old, enter Gary Oldman as Carnegie, the ruler of a small town in the desolate wastelands. As one of the few literate people around, he holds considerable sway in a world where gloves and chapstick are bartered for water, and cats are eaten and extruded for their oil. Carnegie wants what Eli has, and Eli doesn't want to give it to him. Hilarity ensues.
That was a Gary Oldman-esque pronunciation of oil. Good work.
I was trying to get the italics across and kind of the factor of the oil.
Yeah.
Did it come across okay?
Yeah, I think it did.
Okay, thank you. Jer, this was your pick. Tell us why you chose a movie that is 10 years old.
Yeah, this is maybe our most recent, our newest movie that we've done, perhaps.
Think so. I think Watchmen was before that, and that was what, 08, 09?
Yeah, it was close. 09.
Yeah.
If it's not. I chose this for a number of reasons. It's been on my list for a long time just because of the sort of Supergirl concept that Lee brought to us very long ago, of taking a movie that should have been better than it was and us having the conversation of remaking it and making it better. This movie, I really like this movie a lot, but I also felt like it sort of got lost in 2010 when it came out. The Road had just come out. I think Walking Dead had just started. Like, we were kind of inundated a little bit with this sort of post-apocalyptic wasteland of cinema and TV. And so I think it just kind of became a little bit of white noise, but there's a really fascinating, interesting story and twist on this one that you don't see in a lot of other movies of a similar theme. And so I really liked it, and I wanted to talk about it. And the opportunity came up when we kind of went through this current iteration of movie choices that we're doing with the Hughes brothers and other Black directors, and so this was the chance. And I'm honestly a little surprised that none of the rest of you had seen this.
Yeah, it was what you talked about with apocalypse stuff kind of being overwhelming at that time. I have a feeling that was my feeling at that time. I did watch The Walking Dead. I haven't seen The Road, and I didn't see this. So for whatever reason, like, I think I watched Walking Dead a little bit later, probably 4 or 5 years after this. But yeah, it didn't hit my radar in a way that was like really meaningful.
All other things being equal, read and watch The Road seriously.
Yeah, I need to. Yes.
But yeah, that's neither here nor there, but holy cow, watch and read The Road. But yeah, that's my history. I liked it when it came out. I had seen it either in the theater or shortly thereafter. And it's been on my shelf since then, because I just really like the themes of this movie and how it was made. And this was my chance to make it better.
Right on. I'm glad you did. As usual, in the first part of our discussion here, we are going to be recasting the film. We have three major roles and five minor roles. The first major role is that of Carnegie, originally played by Gary Oldman. Carnegie is the bad guy in the movie and is overacted accordingly by the aforementioned Gary Oldman. He might be a man of morals, but you wouldn't know it by how he treats his hench people. Oh, Andy, please, hench people is not the preferred nomenclature. Hench persons. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that, Andy. Hench persons. Or those who have the displeasure to come into his town while wandering through their land like Kane and Kung Fu. He really, really wants the book that Eli has and will do just about anything to get it. This was a very meaty role, I would say, M-E-A-T-Y, full of meat, and Gary Oldman devoured it. It is
on
the Gary Oldman scale of overacting, I would put it closer to The Professional than to, say, boy, I don't know what else.
Harry Potter.
He's kind of always up there. It's okay. So I would say the most overacted is Dracula. The next most overacted is The Professional. This one is probably like three or four down from that. Like he's quite good at it.
Where would you put this in relationship to The Fifth Element?
Oh God, the Fifth Element would be right below The Professional. Maybe above The Professional.
This is four.
This is four.
Okay, it's up there though. Yep. Yep.
Good call on Dracula though.
Thank you. Oh, God. He's so good in it, but good Lord. That movie is just so much of everything. So I tried a lot of different things on. I tried a lot of different actor hats on with this, and nothing felt quite right until I was reading through, I can't remember, maybe it was either Twitter or Instagram, and someone was talking about how much they love the new Cobra Kai series that's been going on. I think it started on YouTube, and now maybe it's on Netflix. And yeah. I went, oh, my God, it's got to be Billy Zabka. And so, in Jer's honor, I'm preaching to the choir here for Jer, and I'm pretty much guaranteed to get his vote, I think. We'll see. But it just seemed like, wow, this guy needs a chance. He needs a chance to have something that's a little bit more popular, a little bit more mainstream. I think he can absolutely do it. And it just like when it was like the total light bulb moment for me, and it was amazing. And I'm just so happy about it. So William Billy Zabka is my choice for Carnegie.
And what's funny is I also thought, hey, Billy Zabka.
Really? Oh my God.
The difference being that I followed it up with thinking, nah.
You had the common sense that I did not.
What I love about Zabka in the new Cobra Kai deal is that it gives him, as the bully of an 80s movie, and every bully in every 80s movie that he was, it keeps him as that character, but gives that character humanity. And it's really, really cool if you haven't watched the show.
I like it a lot.
Yeah,
it's good.
Really good. And I feel like he would offer up a lot more humanity to this role than the one-dimensional bad guy of the old West town that Carnegie was for Gary Oldman.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. Well, that makes me happy. I'm glad you like it. Lee, on to you. Who is your Carnegie?
Well, I kind of liked Gary Oldman's performance, even though it is very big at times, very over the top. But I don't know. For some reason, I think it's kind of appropriate for this type of character. But I felt like he wasn't quite menacing enough. Maybe it's because I've seen too many like nice guy roles from him in, you know, the recent, I don't know, 10 years or so. So I wanted someone who was maybe a little bit more menacing and intimidating. So I went with Klaus Bang. If you're not familiar with him, he is a Danish actor who most recently starred in the Netflix series Dracula as Count Dracula, and he's really good in it. The only other thing that I've seen him in is he plays... One of the main bad guys in the girl in the spider's web, the Claire Foy, Elizabeth Salander movie that came out a few years ago. But he plays a really good, intimidating bad guy. At the same time, he can be very charming as well, and which is why I think he was perfect for Dracula. So if you haven't watched that, it's one of those British series that's, you know, only three episodes long, but every episode is 90 minutes.
His picture on IMDb certainly paints a good portrait of who this character could be.
Yeah, he's really good. And that's, I highly recommend that series if you're into that sort of story. The first two episodes are better than the third, but it's overall, it's a really good series. But that's it. Klaus Bang.
Who's the guy that plays the Juggernaut in the terrible third X-Men movie? Is that Vinnie Jones?
Yes.
So that guy looks like if Tom Cruise and Vinnie Jones had a baby. It's pretty great.
Vinnie Jones had the finishing school.
Yeah, he's really handsome, but he's got that little ruggedness to it. Like, looks like he's had his nose broken a couple times. Like, yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Possibly. I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a lot of his work. So I'm not real familiar with his, I looked through his IMDb list and there, not a lot of it jumped out at me. So I only know him from a couple of things, but the things that I have seen him in, I'm impressed with. So,
you mean you didn't see Überleben auf der Sterndisfront?
No,
he was great.
It's on my list.
Lars Knudsen.
It's not worth your time.
It's next on my Netflix queue after The Lion King.
Yeah,
Lordy.
But let's move on to Andy.
I liked Gary Oldman in this role, but it was a little one-dimensional, and I thought Gary Oldman tried to do as much as he could, maybe with not great writing. The character was interesting, but just was a little predictable, perhaps. So I went a different direction with this one. I wanted to create a character that was entirely menacing, but in a way that you didn't expect, that maybe... at the beginning, you perhaps thought that this character was an ally or a good person. And then when you saw the twist happen, then it would become quite terrifying. So I chose someone who can do that. Someone who can do anything.
You didn't choose somebody who could not do that?
I went with Meryl Streep.
Of course you did.
So I want to create Carnegie as... the matron of the town, someone who has a very motherly, maternal, those are two words that mean the same thing, instinct, a protective instinct for her, the citizens of her little town. But should you not go the way that she wants you to go, then she will rip you apart. And I think that's what Meryl Streep would bring to this role. I want to give this character a little bit more room to have just a whip snap turn that'll knock your socks off.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, me too. I don't know if I've ever seen Meryl Streep hold a gun.
I don't even think she has to. I don't think she has to. What was the movie? Doubt. Has anyone seen Doubt?
Yes.
No.
Okay. I recommend it. Meryl Streep, Amy Adams, and...
Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Thank you very much. All of fantastic performances. But Meryl Streep plays kind of the head nun of this, I'm really butchering the plot of this movie, but anyway, but her character is so strict and joyless, kind of for lack of a better term. And there are points in the movie where she kind of has to snap and call people out on it. And it terrified me when I saw it. And that wasn't really even an evil character. It was just kind of a cold character. So I imagine if you add a little fire to that, then I think she will make it quake in your boots.
So good old Meryl.
Good old Meryl. Can't go wrong with Meryl. Jer, I'm intrigued to hear why you chose Mads Mikkelsen.
So I chose...
That joke is still funny after 9 years.
I, along with Lee, I wanted somebody much more menacing in this role. I thought that I was intrigued by the idea of Carnegie being kind of a bumbler that he was in the original movie, that he ruled this town, but he never really did anything right or well. Everything sort of fell apart from minute one. So I wanted somebody that when Eli came to town and could see everything sort of laid out as how this town is structured, that there was a distinct reason why Carnegie ruled this town. He ruled it with an iron fist, with intimidation and with fear and with just stone cold, like, you're gonna find yourself with concrete shoes on in the bottom of the lake or whatever. So I chose somebody that has played a serial killer, a Marvel villain, and many other menacing characters. So Andy, I will see your Meryl Streep, and I will raise you Mads Mikkelsen.
Yes! 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 Yes!
Oh my God!
Oh man!
We've done it. Shut it all down.
We've done it.
Brought it back to the beginning. Sorry.
Oh gosh, I don't know which movie I want to see more. I'd want to see a version of the movie where Mads Mikkelsen and Meryl Streep are heads of rival towns.
Ooh.
Ooh. Okay. Now I'm paying attention.
I just rewatched Casino Royale, and
he is so good in that.
Yeah, yeah. He's fantastic.
And
I just
Hannibal,
finished. Yeah, I just so, finished Hannibal. Just, so creepy.
He's just oogie in Hannibal. Yeah. Yeah. I want way more of that. Anyway, Mark, I'm not sure where you're going, but please go somewhere great.
I was thinking oogie, and I really wanted somebody who could, you know, just chew up that those scenes. Just, you know, om nom nom nom. Yeah, somebody who could be quiet, who could be loud, who can overact like Gary. I went with Ewan McGregor.
All right.
I am intrigued by that as well.
Go on.
Perhaps partially because I recently seen him be the bad guy in Birds of Prey, the fabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn, and he did, maybe a really good Gary Oldman impression in that movie.
That's actually a really good call. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think he can do all the stuff that I want him to do. So that's my choice of Ewan McGregor.
I am so excited for the Obi-Wan Kenobi series.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Whenever it happens, yeah.
I'm excited to see who's going to win in this battle of who's going to play Carnegie.
Yeah, this is a solid list.
This would be a really five-way tie.
Yes. I don't know that I like Ewan McGregor as any villain, but I think he would do great at this.
Him Ewan McGregor?
Did I?
I think you did.
Ewan McGregor. Excuse me. Ewan McGregor. I had an N of E in there. Yeah. Also, I want to just give a major shout out to Mark's maybe meme maker's Mark, Mary Elizabeth Winstead in Birds of Prey. She was so good. And I didn't know where it was going. And then when it got there, I was like, oh, okay. And I just like absolutely loved it. So good.
Mm-hmm.
So what you both are saying is that is worth watching.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Good to know.
It's on HBO right now. So if you subscribe to HBO, definitely watch
Excellent.
It.
Excellent.
So for the role of Carnegie, originally played by Gary Oldman, I went with Billy Zabka. Lee went with Klaus Bang. Andy went with Meryl Streep. Jer went with Mads Mikkelsen. And Mark went with Ewan McGregor. Holy mackerel. That is something else. Up next is the role of Solara, originally played by Mila Kunis. Mark, tell us about Solara.
Okie dokie. Originally played by Mila Kunis, Solara is the young daughter of Carnegie's blind lady friend? She seems to serve a utility role for Carnegie, playing anything from the barmaid to the prostitute and spy. That is, until she meets Eli and decides that his is the better path. I actually didn't love Mila Kunis in this one, although I did like what the casting agents were going for. I like the wide-eyed mystique that she has. I was hoping to find somebody that could be, I don't know, shiftier. I want somebody that you can not exactly trust right away. The person I landed on is Anya Taylor-Joy.
Oh, nice.
Thank you. Yeah, she's really talented. And we would know her from The Witch, mostly. She was in Split and Glass, although I haven't seen either of those. But I'm really excited for New Mutants when that finally comes out.
It's come and gone, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know if it ever got...
Wait,
I think it got released. I think so. Yeah. I think it got kind of buried. Maybe I'm wrong. Never mind.
That film was troubled. It has been for years. Yeah.
I know Maisie Williams was basically on Twitter going, please go see the movie.
But yeah, in that one, Anya Taylor-Joy plays Magic, who is one of the cooler X-Men. Yeah, I really like what she does with her eyes. And I think that could bring a lot to the Solara role. So that's my pick, is Anya Taylor-Joy.
I would just like to read a line from her bio on IMDb. Anya Taylor-Joy's dad was an international banker, but gave it all up to race motorboats.
That's a movie in and of itself.
I find that fascinating.
Starring Mads Mikkelsen.
What a life she must have led growing up. Oh my gosh. To back that up, I don't know anything that she's done, so I really can't speak to her, but she definitely looks the part.
Yeah, you're right on with the eyes, Mark. I've seen her in the two Shyamalan movies, and she was pretty good. I enjoyed her. I feel like I just saw something else that she was in, but now I can't remember what it was. But I think that's, yeah, I think age-wise, that's good. I think the lack of trustworthiness at first, like you question her motives more than you would for Myla. I think that's a really good point for that, and she would do well with that.
Yeah, thanks. So, Kyle, I'm going to hand it right back to you.
Coolio. So I wanted somebody who I think I've picked one time before. I'll have to double check the archives here, but I went with Hannah John Kamen. She is from Ant-Man and the Wasp. She played the villain in that, who I thought was incredibly cool. I thought it was really cool design, and I thought the story was really good. She was also in Ready Player One. She plays kind of the bad guy's sort of like hench person. How's that, Andy? Is that better? Hench person. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
She's really, really good. And it's one of those people where I think Ant-Man and the Wasp was supposed to be that, but I think she got overshadowed a little bit, which is too bad. But she just needs that one role to like kick her into pretty much the territory where she should be, right? Like just a go-to young actress. And so, you know, I figure what the heck, let's give her another chance here. So John Kamen.
As keeper of the archives, I can confirm that she has not been picked before.
Really? Weird. I thought I picked her at one point. Very odd. Never mind.
I like that pick.
Thank you.
Yeah, I loved her in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah,
who was too. She in Ant-Man and the Wasp? I'm trying to remember.
She's the villain, kind of. She's the one.
Ghost.
The Phantom? Ghost.
Ghost. Yeah. Yep.
Cool. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. Jer, on to you. Who is your Solara?
Yeah, I love Mila Kunis, probably unhealthily, and I didn't like her in this movie as much. I think, agreeing with Mark, that she wasn't cast well or something. But I like the idea of her character. And so I wanted somebody that was going to be a little bit more believable as somebody that is surviving in these conditions, somebody that had a little bit more edge to her and that was a little bit more believable as somebody that was kind of handling their own. And so I chose Zendaya.
Ooh, interesting.
Intrigued.
You know her from the two Spider-Man movies, the most recent ones, and probably most recently the HBO series Euphoria, which is really crazy, and a bunch of other stuff. But that's probably the top three as far as most recently. She was in Greatest Showman as well.
Yeah, she's super talented.
She is outstanding. Yeah, she has got a long future in front of her, I think.
I kind of have a little bit of trouble seeing her getting dark, in this, you know what I mean? But I, maybe it's just that she hasn't had the opportunity to do that yet. Like, she just hasn't had that film opportunity.
Have you seen her in Euphoria?
No, no. Okay. As a stepdad of a high schooler, I think it's probably best that I don't watch Euphoria.
That's fair. That's very
I know
fair.
A bit about it, and I will watch it eventually, but yeah, I'm a conscientious objector, I guess.
No, that's absolutely a legitimate thing to think.
It's, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Zendaya is my pick, and now we go to Lee.
For a lot of the reasons that Jer cited, I wanted someone who was a little tougher, I guess, who kind of portrayed someone who could, I guess, take better care of herself and just have a little bit more mystique about her. So I went with Peyton List, who I don't know from anything other than the Cobra Kai series. She plays a character named Tori, who is kind of, I guess, like, she's one of the Cobra Kai students, and she's a bit of an antagonist, but she's really good in that role, and she's very believable as someone who could kick your ass. So that's kind of what I was thinking of. And thinking about my Claudia pick, since they're mother and daughter, that was part of my decision as well. But I think she's great for the role of Solara.
And you're introducing me to all kinds of new people this week, Lee. Nice.
Yeah. Now you know what I've been watching on Netflix.
Right? And I didn't even know that when I picked Billy Zabka. Who knew?
Anyway, I think Andy is our last pick for Solara.
I am. I wanted to go in a direction for Solara. I also didn't like Mila Kunis all that much. I want this character to be less of a sex symbol, token attractive female, and more of an interesting character. And especially, I think, when adding it to the role of Eli, they do this a little bit in the movie of, Eli's clearly not interested in Solara as a sexual partner. He makes that very clear. But even so, it was like, you have this beautiful leading man and this beautiful leading lady. Like, let's put them together. And I didn't like that. So I want someone who I think can, well, I'm not certainly not saying she's ugly, because I don't think she is, but I think she can play very strange and quirky very well. I went with Millie Bobby Brown.
Ooh.
Pause. I like that.
Yes.
So you may know Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things. I'm actually referencing, well, I'm referencing that a little bit. I think I'm referencing the new Enola Holmes that just came out, where I think she's playing Sherlock.
I enjoyed that way more than I expected to.
Yeah. I haven't seen it. All I've seen are the previews, but her performances, even in these little previews, is spellbinding, because she seems like it's such a unique presence in front of the camera.
It's a unique way to film too. It's a very fourth wall breaking kind of idea of Sherlock Holmes. It's very clever, and I didn't think I would like it as much as I did.
So I want someone who really is just more of a very, like, a person who's curious to see what's outside of the world and wants to get, like, understands that the circumstance that Solara finds herself in is an awful one, and maybe sees Eli as an opportunity to go learn more about the rest of the world, and sees it with maybe a little more wide-eyed wonder that might become quickly jaded by seeing, you know, how awful it is out there, but at the same time, maybe seeing some of the beauty in it, despite all that. So I went with Millie Bobby Brown for this one.
I dig it. That's a good pick.
Yeah, that's really good. I like that a lot.
Thank you.
You're welcome. For the role of Solara, originally played by Mila Kunis, Mark went with Anna Taylor-Joy, I went with Hannah John-Kamen, Jer went with Zendaya, Lee went with Peyton List, and Andy went with Millie Bobby Brown. For our finer major role, that is Eli. Jer, tell us about Eli.
Gladly. Eli is our lone wanderer hero. He's adept at survival, hunting, macheteing, and reading. He is trekking across this desolate wasteland to the west in order to deliver the book to where it belongs. He is equal parts classic cowboy, biblical pilgrim, and Mad Max. He fought the good fight. He finished the race. He kept the faith. Yeah, Denzel did outstanding in this role, I feel like. And he played it equal parts sort of holy and badass, and also very reserved and quiet for the most part. Everything was very small, and I liked that about how he played it. And he's hard to replace in this role, even though the role itself is very broad. I went through a laundry list of people, and I ultimately ended on a well that I go back to a lot, which I feel a little bad about. But the person that I chose, I think, encapsulates all of the best parts of this role in a combination of ways. I would reference specifically Furiosa and her role in The Old Guard, which is on Netflix right now. Of course, I am talking about Charlize Theron.
I love it.
Nice. Interesting and bold, and I like it.
Yeah, intrigued.
I think putting the Old Guard on there as a reference is really perfect for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Yep. I just want to combine that role and Furiosa from Fury Road, and that's the character of Eli, with maybe a little bit of spiritualism in there, too.
I really like The Old Guard.
Yes.
That was a very interesting movie.
Yeah, it was a lot better than I was expecting it to be. Same kind of thing.
I rolled through a lot of different people, and I just kept coming back to her, and I want to see her in that role. Especially now with Millie Bobby Brown as her sidekick. So there we go. Andy, back to you.
I also liked Denzel in this role very much. I really can't find many faults with it. He's just so good. He's so good.
Yep.
So I want to pick, if I'm going to make this movie how I really want it, I'm just going to lean right into it. I wanted someone who maybe, if I was going to get picky, could do the martial arts scenes a little better. So I went with Donnie Yen.
Ooh, that would do it.
And I think he would, no, not that Denzel Washington did a bad job, because I think he did a good job, or his stunt double did, whatever. But, I think Donnie Yen would do better. And really, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I really just want him to play his Chirrut Imwe character again, because I love that character so much.
from Rogue One.
Yeah, exactly, from Rogue One. I think my favorite Star Wars character now. But what Donnie Yen would need to do is to maybe add a little bit of the humanity. I'm thinking of specifically the scenes with Denzel Washington and... the engineer, Tom Waits. Like when they're kind of going back and forth about like using the cat oil instead of chapstick, or, you know, those kinds of just little quirky scenes to show the humanity between them, that these people are trying to survive and live a life in this awful, desolate wasteland. That I think if there was to be a struggle in this role, that would maybe be it for him, but I think he would do a great job with that. I think the characters that he plays tend to be more serious characters. So that would be my one qualm, but give him a machete and saying things like, "You touch me with that hand again, you're not going to get it back." Like, come on.
Yeah. Well, and for all the influences that that Westerns have on this film, I think there's a lot of kind of the lone samurai kind of vibe too, you know? And like,
oh, very much, very much.
It's, mm-hmm. It's very much a blending of the West and the East in that. And I feel like this would really lend to that in a really cool way. I like that a lot.
And one more thing, and I wasn't really ever sure on this one. I maybe kind of figured it out by the end, but for a while, I wasn't sure if Eli, the character of Eli, was blind or not, as was some of the other characters. And I kind of wish that he was. I don't think he was, but I kind of wish that he was, which even more so would lend itself to the Chirrut Imwe character that I really want him to be. So,
wait, you don't think Eli was blind?
Was he blind?
I think there's a pretty strong implication that he was.
He was very blind.
Okay, I wasn't.
What?
I went back and forth, and I wasn't quite sure. In the end, I thought, no, I don't think he is.
That was the big twist at the end.
Yeah, the book being Braille didn't do it for you?
I understand that the book was Braille. Well,
I understood that, but it didn't suggest to me that he was blind. I thought he could just read Braille.
If you go back and watch it again, you'll see really subtle things that Denzel does, like when they're in the little hut with the older couple. He stands up and he starts walking, and his shin bumps the table. And when he reaches for things, he kind of doesn't quite catch them directly. He like gets close to them. There's a lot of really subtle things that, going back on a second watch, you realize that Denzel is doing really, really cool to show you without showing you that he is not quite there as far as sight.
Okay, and we're getting a little off track here, but I want to talk about it. That I thought about that too, but then I thought there were other scenes that showed me the opposite, that he could see. So I'll have to go back and watch it again. This will be a fun little discussion to have. But
I'm going to have to do that too.
So even better though, let's say he was blind. Perfect. Donnie Yen, sold, done. Mark, you're up.
I too loved Denzel's performance, and I mostly just wanted to find somebody who was a newer Denzel, so I picked Idris Elba.
Yeah, that's the heir apparent.
Ooh, nice.
I considered him.
He might be a popular pick, and I went for it anyway, so Idris Elba.
You said it first, so it's your pick.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's everything that Denzel is, and then a bit more British. So take that as you will.
100% more British, actually.
Yeah.
A little bit more scowly.
Yeah, yeah. Although Denzel was good and scowly in the original, I would say.
I picture Idris Elba as being taller, too. I don't know why.
Hmm. Interesting.
I think he is taller.
Well, there we go.
We'll keep this one short to make up for Andy's lengthy one. Kyle, how about you?
Yeah, so I wanted to mix it up a little bit. This is another one where I thought of a lot of different people. And then I was thinking about The Mandalorian coming back. And I went someplace that I didn't think I was going to go, and I ultimately landed on Gina Carano, who plays a character whose name I don't know from The Mandalorian, but kind of his main friend there, or his main sort of compatriot.
I thought you were going to say Werner Herzog.
I wish. Oh, my God. Oh, God. Oh, no, I want Werner Herzog so bad. Okay, never mind. Gina Carano. Yeah, she is so good. She is a former MMA fighter, I think. So, you know, yep. Lots of pedigree there. Can do stunts, can do fighting, can be kind of standoffish, but at the same time has heart. I really think that she can kind of, you know, straddle all of the lines that are necessary in order to make this role work. And I just think it would be a cool kind of mix. Like maybe it was Elizabeth and she goes by Eli or whatever, right? Like I think that could be really cool. And I know, you know, Jared did that too with Charlize, which I appreciate. But yeah, I just thought that would be a really interesting, different take on it. And I still think that, you know, like you could still have, if you wanted a female Solara, like there's no reason why they wouldn't send a, you know, a beautiful young woman to take care of a you know, maybe older, a little bit older woman who's coming in. Like, you know, there's just lots of different ways that we could do that. So, yeah, Gina Carano was my pick.
By the way, she plays Cara Dune in The Mandalorian.
Cara Dune. Thank you. Good call.
Yeah, and she's coming back, right? She's in the next season?
Yep.
She is.
Cool, cool.
Yeah. Right on. Lee, on to you. Finish us off here for Eli.
Well, it's funny you should mention The Mandalorian because I picked Pedro Pascal.
Nice.
Who plays the titular Mandalorian in that series, and who I think is really good. That's the only thing that I know him from. I can see from his IMDb page that he's playing Maxwell Lord in the twice delayed Wonder Woman 1984 movie that's supposed to come out sometime.
Yep. He looks real slimy in it. I can't wait.
Yeah, he was in Game of Thrones.
You have to see him in Game of Thrones.
Probably top five favorite character of all of the characters in Game of Thrones for me.
Yep.
Really?
Narcos, too. He was in the first, for sure the first season. I can't remember the first two, but he's really good in Narcos.
Yeah. Just based on his performances in The Mandalorian, he seems like kind of tailor-made for a role like this. So,
I mean, The Mandalorian is basically the Book of Eli. Except it's the child instead of a book.
Yeah. So that's really, really true.
I just thought of that. That's pretty funny. Everybody's trying to get this book or this kid. So it is spot on.
So it's already been made. So yeah. I win.
Oh, that's awesome.
Post-apocalyptic Western, space Western. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. No, it is very much.
Oh, God, that's funny. Good right pick, on. Lee. Yeah, I really strongly considered it. And then I just kind of like looked to the left when I was considering Pedro Pascal and I went, oh, interesting. And so I went with that instead. But yeah, it's a great pick for sure.
Thank you.
All right. For the role of Eli, originally played by Denzel Washington, Jer went with Charlize Theron. Andy went with Donnie Yen. Mark went with Idris Elba. I went with Gina Carano. And Lee went with Pedro Pascal. Now, finally, the minor characters, the first of which is Red Ridge. Jer, take it away.
Yes, Red Ridge, originally played by Ray Stevenson. As is requisite for all post-apocalyptic and or Western shantytowns, the evil boss has been allocated one tall, brooding henchman to stand behind him and be menacing. Red Ridge is very good at this. He's also a confusingly subtle man in a movie bereft of subtle people.
Jer, it's hench person, please.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let so me do true. It again. Yeah, Ray Stevenson did a really good job with what he was given. I think the character of Red Ridge is probably one of the more complex in the movie, far more complex than Carnegie. And but yeah, ultimately he is just supposed to be, you know, second in command of this town and the right-hand man of the bad guy, and also, you know, have some moral conflicts going on within his head. So I went with a person that I have enjoyed. I just finished the second season of The Boys on Amazon, which if you are into superhero stuff and also horrible violence.
Mm-hmm. I'm listening.
Definitely watch The Boys. It's very, very good. I went with Laz Alonso, who plays a character whose name is Mother's Milk in The Boys. I think he has an actual name as well, but everybody calls him Mother's Milk or MM. And he is basically the second in command of the good guys, The Boys, behind Carl Urban. And he's great. He has a very menacing, big energy to him, but also he's a complex character that cares about his kids, cares about the group itself, cares about what they're doing. And he is equal parts big and mean and a soft teddy bear.
Cool. I really need to watch The Boys. I'm excited.
Seriously, go watch The Boys.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get there very, very soon.
That's all I got for Red Ridge. Claudia is next with Lee.
Originally played by the lovely Jennifer Beals, who somehow hasn't aged since 1984.
No kidding.
I don't know how she does it, but whatever. While seemingly helpless because of her blindness, Claudia finds strength she didn't know she had when it comes to protecting her daughter, Solara. I like this role. It provides a bit of a voice, I guess, against Carnegie. So I like that there is this character who voices like her concern for everything that happens to Solara, and that, you know, she's not just a forgotten character. So in light of my pick for Solara, I went with Kate Blanchett.
Ooh, nice.
Because they actually... Okay. They look a little similar. They look like they could be mother and daughter. And Cate Blanchett is just awesome in anything she does. And I think that, you know, in a remake, maybe this character could be expanded a little bit, give her more to do.
I wanted to see more of this character.
Yeah. I like that we have the character. I just wish there was, she had more scenes. But I think Cate Blanchett would be great for it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with Cate Blanchett ever. So I'm here for that.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that she is not British. She is Australian.
Yeah.
Yeah, that blew my mind when I read that.
Isn't that
yeah.
the same thing?
Yeah.
Apologies.
Thanks, American Andy.
apologies to the British Empire and all of its protectorates.
Yeah. But I believe Kyle's up next with The Librarian.
Yeah. The librarian is, spoiler alert, the person who Eli was walking towards, whether he knew it or not. He oversees the library where Eli's book can finally have a proper, safe home. Originally played very surprisingly and very subtly by Malcolm McDowell, who you know from Clockwork Orange and many, many other movies fame. I was like, wait a minute, is that Malcolm McDowell? That's Malcolm McDowell. I might have said that out loud. He's fine. Like, it's, you know, it's a largely forgettable performance just because it's super fast, but he does fine. And it's ultimately very important, which is kind of a, you know, MacGuffin of sorts of where he's going. I have been watching a lot of The Umbrella Academy on Netflix, which I'm very much enjoying. We're watching that as a family right now. And the person that I had in mind was Colm Feore for this. He plays the father of the people, of the kids in The Umbrella Academy, Reginald. I just think that he would have that kind of like stoicism and kind of that mysticism a little bit too at the same time when, you know, they're quote unquote just binding books or creating books. But still, this is something that is necessary in this world where everything is different. And so I went with him, Colm Feore.
Speaking of Umbrella Academy, if we ever have to pick a kid for a movie, I'm going to be picking Aidan Gallagher a lot.
Which,
that kid,
is he five?
He is unbelievably good.
Yeah. He's like, he's so good that I thought he was probably like 27 and he just looks that old, but I have no idea.
No, he is, I had it. He is young. He's a kid.
Crazy. Wow.
Yeah. He's 17.
Wow. That's cool. I had no idea.
Yeah. He is so good.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I love that show. We're really digging it. We sort of instituted a Thursday night show night just so that we have like some degree of structure in this time where there's not a lot of it with school being at home. And we've been watching that. We just finished season one. We're about to start season two. So I'm
nice.
I'm digging
That's
it.
What I just finished season one, too.
Nice. Right on. Cool.
Awesome.
Excellent. Up next is the engineer. Mark, tell us about the engineer.
The engineer, originally played by Tom Waits, is Carnegie's resident tinkerer and trading post proprietor. He's good with locks, knickknacks, and thingamajigs, and will trade you some if you got some chapstick. I was honestly a little bit disappointed in Tom Waits. When I saw him in this role, I was hoping that he'd be a little bit weird. And we really didn't get that. He played it very straight. And I was hoping for weird. So I wanted to find somebody who could be quirky and who could really pop in, like with minimal amounts of screen time. And so I picked Peter Stormare.
That's so good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's played that role a little bit from time to time, like absolutely perfectly.
Yes. Yes. Like, I would reference his role in Minority Report, where he plays the doctor who does the eye transplant.
Yes.
Oh, man. That's so terrifying. It's
so gross.
Yeah. Like, he's weird, and he jumps out of the screen without being, like, whimsical or making it a comedy or anything, because it's a serious movie. Like, he doesn't change the tone, but he pops. And I love that.
He played essentially that same character in Armageddon when he was, like, the cosmonaut stuck on Muir. Right before it destroys itself.
He plays Chernoborg, the deity in American Gods, and has some really, really good scenes in the first season of that show.
I've had the first disc from Netflix of American Gods for an embarrassingly long time. Like, I could have probably bought the entire series with however much I've spent on this damn disc, but I'll get to it eventually. Oops. I see it sitting here right now.
The first season of that show was really, really outstanding. Sadly, it sounds like the subsequent seasons drop quite a bit.
Bummer.
So that's my pick, is Peter Stormare. Let's hear from Andy about George and Martha.
George and Martha, originally played by Michael Gambon and Francis de la Tour, are my favorite characters in the entire movie. A devoted couple living in a surprisingly tidy home in the middle of the wastelands, armed to the teeth and set up with home defense mechanisms like it's a Home Alone homage, they reluctantly play a part in one of the big bad fights. Also, Martha probably has Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Which is, for those of you who don't know, the human equivalent of mad cow disease, which comes from eating essentially, it's kind of, for lack of a better term, from cannibalism. Yeah, I loved the scenes with George and Martha. I thought they were fantastic. Frances de la Tour just looked like she was having fun. And to see Michael Gambon just kind of kicking ass was also fun. And then both of them just getting destroyed.
Blaze of glory.
Oh my gosh, what a way to go out.
Yep.
So I also wanted this, I wanted my actors for this one to have a lot of fun with it and to have some natural chemistry. So I went with real life couple Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
Oh God, that's good. Nice.
Perfect.
I think that they will have a hooey of a time playing the slightly paranoid but yet congenial hosts to Eli and Solara.
I really think that Kurt Russell should have an eye patch. I feel like that would just tie the room together. You know what I mean?
I think
you
should have two eye patches.
I think they should both have one
that they share.
And then switch them in between.
It's like old people sharing glasses. They share an eye patch.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome, so, Andy. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think they would have
That's
a lot of fun
really
with that.
Good. It's so funny to think of them as the old couple.
Yeah.
But they are. They're both in their 60s, right?
Yeah.
If not older than that, yeah.
Yep.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Right on. Well, that wraps up the minor characters, and with that, this first episode of Book of Eli. Thank you for hanging out with us. In part two, we will be discussing the tech and filmmaking changes and things that we appreciate, and it maybe make a little different next time around. So look forward to that in a couple weeks. In the meantime, Remakers Mark is a proud member of the Math is Hard Network. To find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast on the network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you will find show notes with links to all of the people, movies, and links discussed in this episode. This information is also attached to the show file in the podcast client of your choice. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, including Google Play, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, where you can rate and review Remakers Mark, which would mean the world to us. And now we are also on YouTube at Remakers Mark. We are on both Facebook, search for Remakers Mark, Instagram, Remakers Mark Podcast, and Twitter at Remakers Mark. So please join in the social media discussion there as well. And, you know, just say hi. So thanks, gents. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate all the picks here. There are some serious doozies, and it's going to be a really, really hard choice for a lot of these. So I think we did good. In the meantime, until part two, may the force be with you.
And also with you.